Counsel. Good morning, Your Honor. Stephen Rohde for Lynn Davidson and Sandra Callender. To put it bluntly, unless this court reverses the order dismissing the first amended complaint, the city of Culver City will have succeeded in preventing a full and fair challenge to the constitutionality of a seriously flawed sign scheme. And without having given Ms. Callender and Ms. Davidson the opportunity to have full discovery and present relevant evidence on each of the issues.
Now, I understand Ms. Davidson and Ms. Callender are separately situated. Ms. Davidson was party to, I guess, Davidson 1.
Yes.
And there's a question there as to whether she is collaterally estopped or by res judicata. Now, Ms. Callender was not a party to that. Is that correct?
That's absolutely right. This case must proceed in all respects with respect to Ms. Callender. Right. She's an independent person. She had joined in the request to put up signs in advance of the November presidential election. She had standing, and the case has to proceed. As far as res judicata is concerned with respect to Ms. Davidson, in the first place, the court found res judicata only as to the facial attacks on the ordinance. And fundamentally, the district court in Davidson 1 had found that fixtures in the public right-of-way are a non-public form. Fixtures, the light poles, the utility poles. This is so important because that is parallel to the decision in Vincent, which the city spent so much time relying on. But Vincent was about the utility poles, public property, not the public right of way. And if we could clear up once and for all that distinction between those fixtures and the full public right of way, first of all, the res judicata does not prevent Ms. Davidson from going forward.
Why is it so clear that Davidson 1 only dealt with utility poles and
Because
the
property? That's exactly what the district court found. When it
In which case? You mean here?
Here.
In this case?
Here. At page 14 of its order, this court thrice concluded that the fixtures along the city right-of-way do not constitute a traditional public forum and have never been designated as a public forum by the city.
So in the first case, you're telling us that she never raised anything else but the fixtures?
Her plan then, and as the early TROs, they were strapping these signs for get out the vote to the utility poles.
What about the allegations in the complaint?
In the current complaint?
No, first Davidson complaint.
The first Davidson complaint generally pled that she was seeking the right to display her get out the vote signs. But the way the case was litigated, and it only in that case only went to summary judgment, was with respect to the fixtures. And that was sustainable because Vincent.
But the original claim was broad enough to encompass all of the public right-of-way, isn't that correct?
But not in terms of the actual issues that were litigated for purposes of res judicata. Mm-hmm. Now, the as-applied challenge, which really is, I would say, equally important to the facial challenge here, is not precluded by res judicata. The trial court never reached the as-applied challenge. It actually denied the city's summary judgment motion in Davidson 1 on the as-applied challenge.
Let me ask you this. Why didn't you have some obligation? You know, in the prior case, there was a settlement.
Yes.
And part of that settlement, she got to be part of a community committee. And
right.
A city council-appointed committee to study the laws. And one of the other features of that prior settlement was, a remedy. Future disagreements. She could invoke
it wasn't
mediation or whatever it was, some sort of mechanism.
It was hardly,
and they could have resolved it that way, and they could have gone to the district court, had it enforced, and all kinds of things. And instead, she files a new lawsuit.
Well, here's why. We thought, I was counsel in Davidson 1, I was counsel here. We thought long and hard. Had the judgment in Davidson 1 been violated And we concluded it had not been violated, and we didn't base Davidson 2 on a violation of Davidson 1. Davidson 2 had to address a new ordinance. It had to address a new scheme in which they claimed they were imposing a moratorium while approving and permitting other signs. So, Your Honor, we simply recognized that this was going to be a battle. As one case speaks of, the parties remained philosophically on a collision course, and we were free on the eve of the municipal election to file a new action and seek a temporary restraining order. So although that mediation, that might have had us talking and going back and forth, it was not a prerequisite. It does not impair our right.
Man, what were the specific signs or manner of displaying for signs in Davidson 2?
Davidson 2 was the same tip. I almost brought one to court. I didn't know if that was proper. A placard, vote for a change, and it had a new place to show your polling booth and the directions to your polling
booth. Where and how was it going to be displayed?
They were going to be put on stakes in the grassy areas around trees. They were going to be placed without the stakes. They could have been placed on A-frames in the sidewalk. They could have been placed in the median of the public right-of-way. So a whole new case presented itself in Davidson 2. And if I fail, the one thing I want to be sure to get across is that prematurely, on a motion to dismiss, where unfortunately the district court accepted the invitation of the city to make factual findings on a motion to dismiss, we got caught in this box that eventually the district court chastised us for not making a showing. Plaintiffs failed to show that there is a longstanding practice or custom which constitutes the standard operating procedure of the local government. We were faulted because we made an allegation of discriminatory enforcement. The city, on the temporary restraining order, brings in their one-sided evidence that they're very vigorous, they're very deliberate in enforcing this statute. And the district court cites their evidence from the TRO on a motion to dismiss. We were on the eve of taking the deposition of the fellow who enforces the sign ordinance, and the whole case had disappeared the day before because it was dismissed. The trial court on a motion to dismiss says the city adduced credible evidence to the contrary, that there had been discriminatory enforcement. This wasn't, we didn't have our fair shot. You're not supposed to convert a motion to dismiss into, at best, summary judgment without notice, an opportunity to complete discovery and to present evidence. But I want to urge this court, in addition, I hope, to reversing, because the motion for 12b-6 was improvidently granted, but to go to the fundamental standard that needs to pervade this case if, in fact, we return to the district court, and that is the public forum analysis.
Before you get to that, help me sort out the as-applied challenge. Is that right?
Yes. I think she has been...
Has the city acted against the plaintiffs?
Plaintiffs? Yes.
In other words, your position is the plaintiffs have indeed violated the terms and the city has already applied the prohibition against them?
No. Under the standing analysis, as long as there is a definite and concrete dispute, there's a real threat that's not hypothetical or abstract, one doesn't have to await the consummation of the threatened injury, Babbitt
said. What was the threat here?
The threat was that they would...
Davidson 2.
Davidson 2, they would prohibit her signs while allowing other signs in the public right-of-way. And she specifically...
Was there an order to that effect? Was there a ruling by the city that so said?
Well, Since we're in this de facto area, they didn't have a permit system. I listened carefully to the prior case. There wasn't a permit system. So what Davidson did is we applied to the city in April for both Callender and Davidson to put up signs in advance of the November election. We did that in April of 2004. We laid out our...
Are signs to be posted on publicly owned land or privately owned land or both?
Publicly owned land.
All publicly owned.
Private, this case does not deal with private property. There are other factors there.
All city-owned land.
Exactly. And what we think...
The strip of grass between the sidewalk and the road, that's considered public property, not owned by the homeowner.
Right, exactly. And so are the median and those little tree... The grassy areas around a tree or a pole. So,
I'm also proposing, I gather from something you said, put up signs on sidewalks?
Yes, because of the pattern we were saying is to the extent that the city allows sandwich board signs and other signs on the sidewalk, they obviously are not deeply concerned about the passage of pedestrians. We're willing to abide by any fair time, place, and manner that avoids blocking pedestrians. There's no goal of doing that here. But we should not be discriminated against, and we should have the same signage rights that other people have had in the public right-of-way. I want to come to the standing issue that we had clearly framed it as a request to post the signs. Interestingly enough, the city has essentially conceded that it was futile. In their brief, at answering brief 38, the city's request to post signs would inevitably be denied. The city could hardly be expected to affirmatively respond to such a contrived request for permission. That's a quote from the city's brief. So we think this case is squarely before you as far as standing is concerned, especially given First Amendment rules as they relate to standing, and that's true of both Callender and Ms. Davidson.
Well, of course, there's a significant distinction in terms of those rules between as applied.
I understand.
And facial.
Yes, the liberality applies more to facial challenges, but we don't think it's irrelevant. And in the court's case in Canatella, there was both a facial and an as applied challenge, and standing was found there. What I want to be sure to have said a moment ago is that public places have historically been associated with the free expression activities like streets, sidewalks, parks, and it is important, consistent with what this court said in ACLU versus City of Las Vegas, Venetian Casino, and all that history of cases going back to Hague and Carey and Grace and Frisbee, and this new case, I want to bring to Your Honor's attention Tucker versus City of Fairfield, a Sixth Circuit case which the U.S. Supreme Court denied cert on 2 weeks ago, 398 F3rd 457, where a red balloon in a rat balloon in a labor strike was attached to the public right-of-way. There was a labor strike against a Ford dealership, and it was found to be a structure, but the court approached it, as in ACLU and these other cases, by first analyzing that the streets and sidewalks are a public forum. Only when you start the analysis that way can you heed Justice Kennedy's warnings and this court's warnings in ACLU versus Las Vegas that we not allow the public forum doctrine to convert what was once an analysis protective of expression into one which grants the government authority to restrict speech by fiat. And if indeed, as a matter of first instance, before you approach the second stage in the analysis, generally speaking, the public right-of-way in Culver City is a public forum, then this case changes drastically. Because then the district court has to make all of its judgments about the narrowness of the restriction and the least restrictive means and whether the government interest in visual clutter, when they're allowing the the public right-of-way to be festooned with signs, all of that analysis will change if this case is returned to the district court with a finding that in the first instance this is a public forum rather than a non-public forum, which is what, unfortunately, the district court found. Your Honors, I am eager to reserve a little under 5 minutes for rebuttal, and I'd like to do that.
Certainly, you may do so, Counsel.
Thank you.
We'll hear from the city. Ms. Fox.
May it please the court, Deborah Fox for the Culver City. And many times in these First Amendment cases, we get weighty constitutional issues, or we try to fill in the gray in the borders or the unresolved issues. But really, in this particular case, I don't think we face those battles or those weighty issues. I think Vincent really gets us all the way home in this particular case. It's a functional equivalent of what occurred here in Culver City. Our counsel is simply categorically wrong in his attempt to characterize Davidson 1. Davidson 1 was about the public right-of-way. And I would offer and invite the court to take a look at the excerpts of record, the supplemental excerpt, tab 1, the complaint for injunctive and declaratory relief by Ms. Davidson and Ms. Collender at SER 008. And it talks and says there at line 17 to 20, in that action, talking about Davidson 1, Davidson challenged the restrictions that the city had placed on the posting of signs, banners, and pennants in the public right-of-way within Culver City. That's precisely the challenge we have here. The fact that perhaps plaintiff has thought of another fixture in the public right-of-way does not distinguish it, nor does it distinguish it away from Davidson 1 nor the Vincent case.
But what did the court, that's what the complaint alleged, but what did the court say in Davidson 1?
Similarly, if one...
Did it limit its decision in any way, or did it broadly announce a rule covering all public fora?
It broadly announced a rule, which is found again at the excerpts of record in 15, starting about talking about the public right-of-way. The case in Davidson 1 did morph over the course of time, that originally they talked about the posting their vote for a change signs on, you know, utility boxes, in the medians. Then later on, they talked about banners and pennants that they wanted to hang both from the light poles and across the banners that stretched across the right-of-ways. So the entirety of the public right-of-way was discussed in Davidson 1 and decided in Davidson 1.
But did Davidson 1, was Davidson 1 limited to fixtures?
No, it was not limited to fixtures. It was the entirety of the public right-of-way, whether you talk about the curb or the gutter or the median or the street itself, the streetscape in its entirety and the appurtenance to it. Vincent, the argument to say that Vincent was simply about lampposts, I would offer, is again not true to the case. The case talks at footnote 1 about the whole milieu of the different fixtures that are found in the public right-of-way. It talks about sidewalks, hydrants, poles, etc. So I don't think there's any distinction that they can make between Vincent and the Culver of Cities regulation. As well, the comment was made that somehow, you know, we need to really look at ACLU versus Las Vegas and the Venetian Casino case and be careful about this public forum issue, because it is undisputed that Judge Fees has found on at least four occasions that the city's public right-of-ways are not a public forum. And the cautionary language that's in ACLU, Judge Pius was on that panel, was the notion that you can't convert all these public right-of-ways. There you had the Fremont Street that was now being converted to a pedestrian-only mall and a different kind of experience and revitalization. Similarly, in the Venetian Casino, you had the situation where the sidewalk in front of the casino had been taken for widening for a roadway to improve traffic. And the court said, you know, we have to be very careful about this public forum issue here and look to the characteristics of the forum. I would offer, I think that Judge...
Well, you know, sidewalks and streets are the classic public forum. And you can impose time, place, and manner restrictions, but they're entitled to the utmost scrutiny.
That's true, but we do see in Metro Media that it does talk about the fact that the First Amendment issues are not fungible. The fact that people can protest, and they can still do so in Culver City. And they can have parades, they can picket, they can leaflet on those public sidewalks. But there is not a necessarily... similar analysis when you look to the issue of signs. And the case law talks about the fact you can't tell a sign to move, you're blocking my way. You can't have some discussion with a sign. You can't tell a sign, no, thank you, I don't want to view your message that you're trying to communicate to me. But I think in the case that was not cited in the briefs, I'd like to invite to the court's attention, Courier versus Potter, a Ninth Circuit case, 2004, at 379 Fed 3rd 716.
Also, be sure and prepare a gum sheet to serve your opponent counsel and file a copy, three copies, with the deputy clerk.
Very good, Your Honor. That was a case where Judge Jones Scanlon authored the opinion, and noted that the Supreme Court has resisted adding additional items into traditional public forum. In this particular case, there is no requirement that the city has to impose some sort of zone of silence. And I think that was a nice quote as well in a case called Hawkins versus the City and County of Denver, a Tenth Circuit case. And that's precisely what Ms. Davidson and Collender would ask that the city to do in this particular instance. I think as well it is important to note the standing question. Ms. Collender does not have a concrete plan, and similarly there has been no asserted enforcement towards her.
Well, help us. You heard what Mr. Rohde said in describing the status of the process. Help us with what does the record show in terms of what these plaintiffs asked for and what the city did?
Right. Well, the record shows that they filed Davidson 2 on March 31st, 2004, and they hadn't asked the city for anything. So it was not until a month later, on April 29th, 2004, that they did send a letter. And we offer that, of course, that could not be granted. We do not allow those signs in the public right-of-way. But certainly, we had never had any prosecution actions against Ms. Collender. We think the Thomas case, along as well with the Ashcroft case, supports that she does not have standing. And an additional item that I'd ask the court again to take note of is the fact that the city has amended its sign ordinance. The court took judicial notice of that new amendment that occurred on April 11th, 2005. And curiously, another comment was made during...
Well, how would that affect this case? What's significant about
it? I think that it certainly makes it moot as to... the whole case is moot, but particularly as...
Why is it moot?
Because now you have a new ordinance.
Well, what does the new ordinance do? Would the new ordinance allow the signs that this little... A-frame
sign? No, they're not.
Or posting a sign on a certain size in the grassy area?
No, it would not.
In certain locations?
It would not do so.
So what would it do for her?
The way the sign code changed was there were two chapters, and we had the provisions in Chapter 13, which are not zoning, which were then amended by the new ordinance that took effect in the April of 2005. And in that particular instance, the reason I do think as well it moots the challenge, you'll recall one of their concerns was said we hadn't adopted, we'd imposed a moratorium, but in fact we hadn't adopted the amendments. And I'm sorry, I misspoke. In fact, the new ordinance in 2005 was the amendment to the zoning code, which is found in Chapter 37-78.
But if it speaks to the same issues, what differences are there?
Well, it certainly is. The regulatory scheme has changed. So, in fact, you know, when you look at the cases like the Mesquite case at Aladdin's Castle, we have a change in the statutory scheme. So it's really this court would just be ruling in an advisory capacity on an issue that is now moot.
But she still can't put up the signs, correct?
That's correct.
Would you address the question of whether the city's policy of granting and denying permits is content-based?
The situation in the public forum is that indeed it is content-based. They allowed signs that are regulating traffic, signs that are indicating public facilities and identifications of places. And as we know, in a non-public forum, you are allowed to have that type of content-based issues. Now, there has been no, and there is no evidence, that in any of the other asserted illegal posted signs that content had made any had been any factor in that. Indeed, most of them, if not all of those signs, are either signs that are directional signs or signs that are illegally posted. And again, going to the issue which we talked about in our brief, is that we cannot open up a forum unless we do so intentionally. Illegal posting of signs that code enforcement may or may not have the opportunity to remove or to see does not rise to the level of a constitutional violation.
You say that the public streets of the city are not the public forum?
They are not the public. They are not public forum for the posting of signs.
Well, but I don't know. You don't. I thought something either is or is not a public forum, and you don't have a public forum for the posting of signs in another public forum, for making political speeches in another public forum, for giving directions. As I understand it, it either is or isn't a public forum, and if it is a public forum, then you have to see what can be limited and what cannot be limited.
That's not the way I read Metro Media. I think Metro Media, in fact, gives us support for the proposition that a public forum, you look to the issue of the type of expression that is proposed, be it assembly, picketing, parading, or posting of signs, and that they're not all fungible.
You have to determine whether it's a public forum or whether the restriction is permissible in a public forum.
I think a little of both. I think it's true that usually when you look at ACLU versus Las Vegas, they say that you look at those characteristics to determine is it a public forum. But those cases generally are really looking at the sidewalks. They are not looking at the issue of the public right-of-way as a transportation mode and the consistency of it with signs, and that's why, of course, Vincent is so useful in that regard.
Well, do you say the sidewalks are not generally a public forum?
No, I am not saying that. Obviously, we know that from case law.
I assume you can get up on any sidewalk in your city and make a speech if I want to.
That's correct, and that's why Judge Fees as well, in his order, also finds, he goes the next step. He not only finds it not to be a public forum, but even if you use the stricter analysis, he finds that indeed we had a sufficient governmental interest and that there are alternate avenues of communication. And he talks about the fact that you can picket, you can leaflet, etc. And accordingly.
Let me ask you a question. If Judge Friedman was out there on your city streets, on city sidewalks, giving his speech, whatever it might be, and he had a little sign there with him, an A-frame sign, could you remove the sign?
If the A-frame sign is on the public sidewalk, yes.
Right next to him, right where he's standing there giving his speech, and he has a little sign there.
I'm holding it up in my... I have a sign on it with a little piece of wood on it, and I'm holding it up and giving a speech. Can you tell me, you can keep speaking, but get that sign out of there?
There is a distinction between the two examples that have been offered. The A-frame sign that's in the sidewalk is prohibited.
Standalone. Is that the difference?
It is the difference, and you can't tell that sign to move. You don't know who. You may not necessarily know who is attending that sign or not attending that sign, and it may be blocking the public right of way. but a sign being carried by a picketer would not come within the prohibition of
How about if Judge Friedman had a little table there next to him and he had his literature right there?
Well,
could you tell him, okay, Judge, you give your speech, but fold up that table and box up those pieces of paper.
Under the provisions of Chapter 13 that are at issue here in 37-78, we would, if it's in the public right of way, he would not be allowed to have the table.
And what kind of scrutiny would you give to that kind of restriction?
Well, the table, you know, I may need to backstep a moment. The table
That's not our case, but, and I don't
know. We had to remand that in ACLU versus Las Vegas, so I suppose I'm getting ahead of myself.
It's something that counsel didn't address, but I'm kind of curious about. You know, one of the issues that they appealed here was the district court's order of attorney's fees. The city asked for over $100,000 in attorney's fees against Ms. Davidson. And the district court found that her complaint was completely frivolous and awarded $98,000, I think it was, or something like that.
That's correct.
Let me ask you this. Was there any her co-plaintiff, apparently, you know, she wasn't burdened by any of these res judicata issues and whatnot. And the city, had Ms. Davidson not joined in this case, and Ms. Callender, is that her name, Callender? Had she just litigated the case on her own, the city would have had to litigate that case, all the claims, everything, and it would be, I think the city would be in a hard position to argue that Ms. Callender's case was frivolous. So why does Ms. Davidson have to saddle the entire cost of the litigation?
Well, first off, Ms. Davidson wasn't saddled with the entire cost of the litigation.
How much of this litigation was she saddled with?
Well, she was saddled with the cost from after the determination on the TRO. And in that particular instance, the court goes through it.
I gather from that point on, the court was still litigating issues related to Ms. Callender.
Well, they were certainly intertwined.
So why should Ms. Davidson? Well, I don't understand why Ms. Davidson then should have to pay for that.
Because certainly the city doesn't understand that it paid her over $300,000 in the stipulated judgment resolving those issues for all time and then has again the same issues put before it. So it seemed to me that only inherent that was an abuse of not proceeding.
Even though the city would have had to litigate against Ms. Callender after that point, Ms. Davidson still is stuck with those fees.
Well, and I don't know that the city would have had to litigate with Ms. Callender. I think we would have prevailed on the standing issues and the mootness issues, but that certainly is not how the case unfolded. I did want to offer that the comment was made as well on that stipulated judgment that they made the determination that that had not been violated. But when you look at their amended complaint, they make the allegations that we did not comply with the court's order. Those are part of the allegations.
I find that stipulated judgment somewhat troubling in this case. But let me ask you one other question. Is it yours? I gather you do. I mean, you take the position that her complaint was completely frivolous.
Yes.
And without merit.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Rohde, you have some reserved time.
Your Honor. I think we heard a lot of important concessions just now. We heard that the request of Callender and Davidson would not have been granted. A clear judicial admission of counsel at oral argument, we do not allow those signs in the public right-of-way. I think that squarely presents this case for this court's ruling and addresses the standing issue. They were not going to allow Lynn Davidson and Sandra Callender. She also, when Ms. Fox talks about it in the non-public forum analysis, she admits that the statute is content-based. She said that a few moments ago. However, without being overly patronizing or cloying, I agree with Judge Friedman that you first look at the forum, the public right of way as public streets and sidewalks, which are a public forum. Judge O'Scanlan's concerns were about adding to traditional public forums. But we're not adding. We are at the core of First Amendment protection on public streets. You start with that analysis, and then you would have to look at the proper standard to apply, whether it was narrowly tailored. The district judge never went to a strict scrutiny test. He said, okay, now I will further analyze the forum as a non-public forum, and he got into the reasonable test under non-public forum. Even there, the reasonable test is a factual test involving a lot of factors and should not have been disposed of on a motion to dismiss. Tabling, of course, was raised in ACLU versus Las Vegas. I want to be sure to have commented that this case hardly justifies any award of attorney's fees. This was a genuinely fought case with serious issues. We do not believe res judicata prevented Ms. Davidson addressing a new ordinance. It's sometimes overlooked in this case. The new ordinance allowed for news racks. When they quote the ordinance, there are five sections, and they renumbered them into 2, 3, and 4, or 3, 4, and 5. One allows news racks. And under FODI, a statute which even allows government speech is content-based and must go through the content-based analysis, which never happened in this case. Vincent was a specific case. Yes, Your Honor.
What do you contend was a new claim that was not covered by Davidson 1?
The new claim is that they imposed a moratorium. However, they continued to approve and allow signs in the public right-of-way, which were functionally equivalent to Davidson signs. Directions to the mosque, directions to the Presbyterian church, announcements of commercial and non-commercial events. All of this was in the public right-of-way by the either approval process of the city or by its lax enforcement. Now, the court was very confident in accepting the city showing that they'd been vigorous in their enforcement. Well, I wanted to get their enforcement fellow in a deposition the next day, and I never got the chance to do that. And we should not have been precluded with a assertion by the city that their enforcement was highly appropriate. Much of what we heard are factual questions. The legal standard, what kinds of signs, whether they block a sidewalk. We haven't been able to bring, Your Honors, a full record that would show you what the nature of Culver City's sign regulations and use are. I'd like to, frankly, sitting in that side of the courtroom, be back here someday where a full record has been developed that this is a public forum and that the city has failed to enact adequate time, place, and manner regulations which are content neutral. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. The case just argued will be submitted for decision, and the